Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
This is Jerry Pippin. We're in Roswell, and of course, this is the 60th anniversary of the UFO crash, and we're at the Civic Center. And we have a man here who drove down from where? Up in Idaho?
Actually, Twin Falls, Idaho.
And yeah, I've been to Twin Falls. It's fairly close to a place that I used to play years ago when I was an entertainer up there. You know what I'm talking about? Jackpot.
Oh, Jackpot, yeah. It's 50 miles south.
Yeah, yeah, right.
What are you doing?
We're doing a radio show right now, and your name again is?
I'm Richard Vaughn.
And so you live in Twin Falls.
Yeah, actually I moved up there 4 years ago from Phoenix, Arizona originally.
Now, when you drive down, you were telling me something that happened strangely?
Actually, it was interesting because driving back and forth from Twin Falls, Idaho to Phoenix, Arizona, you go down State Route 93 all the way through Nevada, and part of that, you pass an area called the Extraterrestrial Highway, number 375, turnoff. But my GPS system that I use to, you know, tell me where I'm going and on the car acts up kind of funny. It starts saying off route and that you have to turn into a certain area, and it turns out there's no roads there at all. And it does that for about a 25-mile stretch north of the extraterrestrial highway on State Route 93.
Well, now, you were telling me when you came on down, you ran across the same thing again.
Well, actually, when we were coming to Roswell, we went out Interstate 40, and just going east of Albuquerque, there's a turnoff that heads south to Roswell, and about 18 miles out, we started getting a signals that we were supposed to turn off sooner than that. And then once again started doing very similar activity that it did just outside of the Area 51 area off of Extraterrestrial
right,
Highway.
Right, right. And you asked me what that was all about, and my best guess, of course I don't know, it's all top secret, but Area 51 is operated by the Department of Defense and the CIA in a joint venture, and it's secret completely. And the same thing with where you were just east of Albuquerque, the Sandia base, which is basically an army base, but that does research. And they work very closely with Holloman Air Force Base, which is near there. And, of course, Los Alamos is not very far. There's rumors that there's an underground city all the way from where Sandia Base is all the way up to Los Alamos with several levels. I don't know that for sure. I have quite a few people on the air who have talked to me over the years in the military, stationed either in the Air Force or the Army, who go to these Quonset huts out there in the middle of nowhere, and guess what? They see evidence of extraterrestrial craft, bodies and parts and everything like that. So what that probably is they're scrambling the system because it's top secret and they don't want anybody to follow in, because it's simple. These days, you just plug in where you're going and that satellite will tell you.
That's true, and I'm sure those rockets that they've got are armed that way, too, so that they can zero in on different things.
Yeah, and that's probably part of it, not only the secrecy, but security, period.
Well, my suggestion is that if folks are out riding on Interstate 40 or State Road 93 in Nevada, check it out and see what they think for themselves if it does it to their GPS systems that they have in their car.
Thanks for coming by our booth and telling us about
that. Thank you.
Okay. We are, of course, here in Roswell. I'm Jerry Pippin, and we're talking to some very interesting people, really, and that's one of the reasons we come to these events. And right now we have Carol Siska with us. And Carol, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. I don't know this is
going to happen. You were telling me at one time that you worked at Los Alamos.
Yes, I retired from there.
You retired from there, so you've been around all of this action. You knew Walter Hout, right?
Yes. After I retired from Los Alamos, I moved to Roswell. And the museum was just barely getting started. It had been in, about 6 months when I first came here.
Mm-hmm.
And about a year later, I'd gotten settled in my home.
Now,
and
about
everything.
What year was that for people?
That was in about 91.
Yeah, just,
when
yes,
I moved here in 1990.
Okay.
Yeah. And so then it was in, say, there in 92 when I started volunteering at the museum. And that's when I first went in and talked to Walter. But the reason I really did was because when I was in Los Alamos, I had the chance to get classified reports out of their classified library. Well, and one of them referred to the Roswell incident. Since I had been born and raised as a kid down in this area.
In this part of the country.
Well, I wanted to find out what that was. So I got that report, and it told me that a craft from outer space had crashed Roswell, and parts of the craft had been sent to Los Alamos for testing. And since I was working for the man that was in charge of non-destructive testing, I took the report into him and asked him.
What did he say?
I said, "Is this true?" He said, "Well, what kind of clearance you have?" I said, "Well, you know what I have. I had top secret, all the weapons work we were doing, everything." "Well, yes, but do you have the need to know on this particular topic?" I said, "Well, I guess not. I don't know." So I started to leave, and he stopped me. And he said, "Carol," shook his hand like this. He said, "I would advise you to always read everything you ever see on this topic. Everything. Always read it." It was never mentioned again between us.
Did you read other things on that topic that you want to talk about?
Not at that time, but the next convincing thing was that I was in a carpool and we saw a UFO one night and we were going home.
Up in Los Alamos?
In Los Alamos. Mm-hmm. Well, that kind of convinced us, too.
You got to tell me about that. Was it close or far away?
Well, no, it was, the sun had gone down behind the mountain, but it wasn't dark. Mm. But this real, real bright light was up in the sky, and one of the fellows says, "Hey, look at that light." Said, "Boy, the sun sure is shining bright on that object." We looked, and just as we looked, it did a drop and made a left turn, went clear out of sight, across the horizon, just like that.
Wow.
The whole thing, just in an instant. So we all just kind of sat dumbfounded and said, "Well," and one kid says, "Hey, I got out of the Air Force just 3 months ago. We don't have nothing that can do that." Well, we talked about it to ourselves later, and, well, no, we didn't tell people because we didn't want to be called dummies or crazies and all this stuff,
sure.
You know. So, okay, a little later after I retired and I came to Los Alamos.
After you left Los Alamos, came to Roswell.
I came to Roswell.
Yeah, right.
And when I was in the museum that first time, on the wall was a letter posted to Roswell, to Walter Haught from the Secretary of the Air Force. And it said that at no time had the Roswell incident ever been mentioned in Project Blue Book. And I said, "Now that's a lie." Because that was the exact report that I saw in Los Alamos and read about it. That was it. Well,
did you ever get a chance to talk to Walter about
that? So that's when I went right in right then.
Okay.
And talked to Walter about it. Well, he didn't tell me anything exactly of his own, but he just, you know, kind of agreed and shook his head and nodded. And, well, he didn't know that letter. We'd gotten that letter, you know, so he posted it and blah, blah. Well, and so then as time went by and I got more and more involved with the museum and I spent more and more time, which I ended up being full-time for about the last 4 years I was there as a volunteer. And anyway, we talked a lot. We talked lots of times about the whole everything, you know, UFOs, everything like that. But all that man ever, ever, ever said was that he had just always done what he was supposed to do, what he'd been ordered to do, and that was turn in the press release and tell the news, and that was his job. He hadn't done anything else with the incident at all. And I heard him tell that hundreds, thousands of times
right,
to
right.
people. Mm. Always very sober-faced.
Yeah, that's basically
that
what he'd tell me.
That was all he ever told.
Yeah.
So then in August of 2000, there was a group of elder hostel people traveling around, and they had made an appointment to come into the museum and visit that day. And there was, I'd say, 35 or 40 of them, because we went into a special room, had all set up for visitors, and at that time I was the director of the museum. And so Walter and Glenn and myself were in there with those people. And so people were asking them questions. They told us the basic story, you know, and then people were asking questions. Well, all of a sudden, this man asked Walter, did you ever see the bodies? Did you see any bodies? Yes, I saw the bodies.
Oh, he said it, huh?
Yes, I saw the bodies very emphatically. And I says, well, what about the material? I saw that too. He said, the kind that you tried to cut and you couldn't cut it. We tried to burn it and you couldn't burn it. You wrinkle it up and it straightens back out. I saw it all, yes. I saw it. About that time, Glenn Dennis, who was very stunned by the whole thing, I think, of Walter's saying that, although I feel that probably Glenn knew it already. But anyway, he took a hold of Walter, and in a little bit, he made some excuses. Hey, they had to go somewhere and do something else, and so they left. And so that was the time that I heard Walter admit it, and so emphatically admit it.
There's no doubt about it.
And there was no doubt about it.
Did he say how many he saw?
No, he didn't say how many.
Have you read about Walter's affidavit?
I've read the affidavit, but he didn't get into that part. All he said was about seeing the bodies and the material. That's what I heard him say that day. And that was all.
Well, but Carol, you were up there at Los Alamos with a top secret clearance, and were there other UFO documents you saw?
Well, there were. There were some all along.
I always hear about this extraterrestrial that might have been up there. You know anything about that?
Yeah, that made me smile a while ago on this last one you were talking about. Well, at one time I heard that there had been one there at one time. Mm-hmm. But that was before my day there. And so I don't know. But now I know I...
Gee, I was hoping you ran across him walking down the hall. I didn't.
Yeah, right. sure. But just like when...
What kind of place is Los Alamos? I mean, is it pretty... you get around?
Oh, yeah, you can get around. Well, you can get out into the work areas and stuff, but...
Are there places you're just not allowed?
No. Because it's all classified area.
If you got your clearance, you can go...
If you got your clearance, you can get around, sure.
Okay, go ahead and tell me
about that. I did that, but...
We're talking about whether or not you saw our extraterrestrial.
No, I didn't see any others, anything else like that at all, other than the one UFO that we saw, like we said. But then, way later years, in fact, it was after I retired, because I was down here in Roswell and everything, and we held a kind of a gathering of the people that used to work in this one particular group up there one time and get together. And so at that time, I had asked the boss, the main boss, he was already dead. But I had asked two or three of the other fellows that were there at that time. They were there in 47.
Okay.
And I asked them something about it, and, well, they just kind of smiled and said, well, you know, we're not going to talk about what we saw in those days.
So you think there was something going on?
They knew that there had been something there, they didn't tell me. They wouldn't tell me what it was.
So this document you saw, they did bring at least some debris up there.
Yes, and furthermore, okay, through the years, we got copies of that Project Blue Book at the museum, everything, but Roswell was never mentioned. No, Roswell was never mentioned in it. But then one time, I was in the gift shop in the museum, and this woman came in. Oh, she was so glad that she got to come to Roswell. I'd wanted to come here for so many years. And so she said, I've just always wanted to come here. And she said, ever since I read about it. And I said, oh, when did you read about it? Oh, many years ago, she said. And I knew that, well... The stories hadn't been out that many years ago. Uh-huh. Stan Friedman's story, first original story, everything, you know, that many years. And so I said, well, would you mind telling me when or where you read about this? Oh, sure, she said. I read about it when I was working at Wright Air Force Base.
Oh, wow.
And I read about it in Project Blue Book. And I said, well, I didn't tell her that I had seen the same thing. But that convinced me
that my story was true.
I mean, I thought, well, I had begun to kind of doubt myself, maybe think, well, maybe I didn't see it in Project Blue Book, but I, you know.
But
then she came out and verified it for me. And she said the thing was, then she checked about a year later because she was going to show it to somebody else.
It was missing?
And it was gone. Said the book was there, Project
but
Blue
not
Book,
that
but not particular part, no. So that's my story.
Thank you very much, Carol Siska. Thank you for coming by and talking to us. And it's a pleasure to be here in your home area of Roswell. Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Major sighting here.
On the 13th of March, weird happenings in the skies over Phoenix recently. And no one seems to be able to explain what it was.
And now, suddenly six amber orbs in a row, totally equidistant from each other, massive span across, pop up.
People say they saw strange lights,
a series of strange bright lights seen over the skies of Arizona. I guess a lot of people wondering.
There are another 10,000 Arizonans who saw the same thing.
Eyewitnesses who saw it say it's like nothing they've ever seen before.
Last night, shortly after 8 p.m., hundreds, maybe thousands of Arizonans reported seeing a triangular-shaped object with three to
thousands of people saw more than stars in the night sky.
The mystery remains unsolved and controversial.
There was nothing new.
Award-winning documentary by Dr. Lynn Kutar, The Phoenix Lights, is now available from ShopJerryPippin.com. Order now. Supplies limited. I'm Jerry Pippin. We are, of course, at the Civic Center here in Roswell, New Mexico. The 60th anniversary of the Roswell crash, and Elaine Mayfield has been one of the major players on this. When they put you on this committee, Elaine, did you know what you were in for?
Not really. I'm by trade, I'm the zoo director. I've been with the city for 23 years and run our small city zoo here, Municipal Zoo, and enjoy it a lot. And the reason I got on the committee, I was with the advertising committee for the city. And we kind of looped things together, and the mayor took on the UFO festival this year, asked me to join. We have about 20 people on the committee, and we jumped in, and we did what we could for Roswell.
And you're doing quite well here.
Well, thank you.
I think the whole thing's gone pretty well. How do you
Well, about halfway through just being a good committee member, I got asked if I would do the vendor chairman, and that's a big one.
Yeah, it's kind of an offhand answer, and the job goes on forever. I don't know.
Absolutely.
You've been a real trooper. You've helped us out a lot here, and we do appreciate that.
Well, you're welcome.
One of the reasons I wanted to get you on is as zoo director. You might tell us where the zoo is, so if people that come to Roswell to see the UFO Museum, they need to go by the zoo, too.
Right. It's actually 1 mile east of the New Mexico Military Institute, right there on Main Street. Very simple.
Do you have an entrance fee or something?
No, it's actually probably one of the last free zoos in the world, I think, but certainly the last free zoo in New Mexico.
What do we have in the zoo in Roswell that would get somebody's
attention? We have a really nice zoo because it's multi-purpose. It's 36 acres of kind of an open area. We have a small lake that many children in this town learn to fish in. And then we have our zoo exhibits in kind of three different areas. We have the native animals, like a trek through our mountains nearby, and then we have a children's zoo area where it's kind of child-friendly and easy to get close to. And then another area where we have some exotics.
Now, Shanina Johnson, who is with us and helping us out, came running in here a couple of days ago and said, "You will not believe what I saw, the most beautiful wolf." And I said, "Where, outside someplace?" And it was walking around inside here. I understand the wolf got an aura reading?
Well, yes, that's what happened. When we were setting up everything, I was talking with Phoenix Rising Now, who does aural photography, and he found out I was a zoo director, and he said, "Well, bring one of your animals in. We'll do that." And I said, "That sounds cool." So we decided that Spot, our wolf, he's supposedly a hybrid wolf dog, 95% they say, but it's because it's illegal to have one that's pure wolf, and we confiscated it from private individuals that weren't taking care of it. So we rescued him and called him Spot, and we used him in our educational programs, and he has his house there at the zoo.
Well, he's very friendly.
Very nice, yeah. And he does pretty well here because we've taken him to schools.
Yeah, Shanina said that he didn't mind the crowd at all.
No, he does well.
Okay, what's an aura of a wolf look like?
Very dark, actually. Very kind of a dark orangey red. And the three main points that we had were that he was very strong and full of life and full of love, and that he had surrounding him spirits as in a tribe. And we've decided that that's us, his family at the zoo.
That is probably true.
Yeah, and they're very social animals, of course.
Does he have to live in a cage?
Yes, he lives in about a 2,000 square foot exhibit that has wire walls and then his house, and it's been about 2 years that we've had that.
Do wolves all get along with each other?
They do pretty well. They're very social animals.
Are they? Okay. Mm-hmm. Elaine Mayfield, we appreciate you coming by.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to welcome everyone here to Roswell.
Hey, it's been fun.
It has been fun. I'm not ready to do it again next week.
Oh, you're not?
But by next year, I'll be back on my feet.
We're going to talk about another conference when we come back with Steve Bassett, and you'll find out that the X conference is back, right? In full glory. Don't go away. I'm Jerry Pippin.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown. Every month in Fate Magazine. Fate Magazine has actually been published continuously since 1948. That makes it the longest-running publication of its kind. From psychics and spiritualists, archaeological hotspots and fringe science, to authoritative UFO and paranormal investigations, Fate articles are factual, informative, and entertaining. Subscribe to Fate Magazine today. Simply go to FateMag.com, FateMag.com, or check it out at your local newsstand. Fate Magazine is a favorite for people looking for answers and for people looking for entertainment.
Fate.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown.